Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello everyone and welcome to The Promised Land, a show about Manchester United with me, Scott Saunders, talking all things Manchester United. There seems to be a lot going on, I've got to admit. We've had the news obviously this week on Erik ten Hag staying, and I recorded a podcast on Wednesday, my thoughts on that, everything around the manager, all the interviews Ineos have done with other candidates. Go and check that episode out if you haven't already. But today it seems like things are moving forward quite quickly already because, you know, I just thought I had to come back because it is 2 days since the last one, but it seems like lots of progress or lots of speculation with good foundations is actually coming out around transfer targets that United are pursuing and going after. Jarrad Branthwaite is the big one at the moment. News broke last night. The personal terms have been agreed with the Everton defender. Now it's up to United to agree a fee with Everton. We'll talk about that. We'll also talk about some other transfer targets as well. Lenny Yoro, who plays in the French League, targeted by Real Madrid. We know Jean-Claire Todibo has been a target for United over the last few, well, even the last year, last few months, especially owned by Ineos and Nice. Can United do a deal there? That's three centre-backs we're talking about. There's tons more as well. Left-back is a priority position for the summer, with some players linked over the last few weeks. Bit quiet there at the moment, but I'll try my best to touch on the wider transfer strategy and the wider behavior of United in the market early in the transfer window. I believe the window opens today. So if we've been panicking or whatever, if you've been panicking about United haven't done anything yet, you know, just sit there and realize it is the 14th of June. The Euros start today. Hope you enjoy. I'll be out in Germany for a couple of weeks towards the end of the month. I'll do my best to bring you more Manchester United news while I'm out there. But we're not that far into the transfer window. The season's only 3 weeks over, two, 3 weeks since United's last game in the FA Cup. You know, United have got their manager situation sorted out. I know people were upset that it took so long, but when you think about it, really, now that we have resolution in the middle of this week, United can just concentrate on getting the summer right, and the behavior that they're showing, I think, is quite encouraging. I'm going to talk about why I think it is encouraging. We'll also talk maybe in less depth today about the priorities and other positions. Michael Olise has been credited, or Man United have been credited with interest in Michael Olise as well, around £60 million, his release clause, which is a heck of a lot of money. I think United's priority should be other positions before they go for him. But I'll talk about that in a bit more depth. And Joshua Zirkzee as well, who plays for Bologna, a striker formerly owned by Bayern Munich, £34 million release clause. It looks like United are in the market for him as well, but Milan in the box seat. I'll talk about my thoughts on the attacking positions maybe later in the show. But what I'm going to do today is just concentrate on what's happening in defense and at center back, because I think this is probably the top priority, along with defensive midfield for the summer. But this, if United signed 5, 6, 7 players this summer, I think it'd be a brilliant summer for them. But it remains to be seen how many they will bring in. But we'll talk today about the defenders, and I'll do my best to run through things. But I don't want to burn through all the topics at once. So I'm going to try and bring you 2 episodes a week on the Tuesdays and Friday slots moving forward, because it seems like there's a lot to sink our teeth into. But Yeah, it's just me. If you missed the update the other day, Rob will be out of action for a little while. So it's just me rambling down the camera and into the microphone. Maybe on occasion I'll be joined by an extra guest from outside to bring a different perspective. But for now, if you like listening, thanks for all your comments from the other day, by the way. I really appreciate the support. And it's made me confident enough to come back and talk to you about transfer targets like 2 days later. So I'll do my best to give my thoughts on everything I've just described there. But please subscribe to the channel if you haven't already. On audio, you can get us on Apple and Spotify. Give us a 5-star review there if you are keen to. And watch us on YouTube. We can like the stream, subscribe, leave a comment, and pop the notification bell on as well so you never miss a show. Really does well for the growth of the channel. And follow on social media at @@ScottSaunders on X, Instagram, and TikTok, and at @TPLMUFC on X. That is 5 minutes worth of introductions I've been doing there, talking to myself down the camera. But hopefully you guys can understand what I'm trying to say here. Let me know your comments on anything I say, because I realize from my Twitter replies, let's just say that people are still waiting for Ineos to do something to make them convinced that actually anything's going to change from how the Glazers behaved and Richard Arnold and John Murta behaved over the last couple of years. You see Richard Arnold's new job, by the way, this week, Norton Motorcycles. I believe he's moved into motorcycles, which is a hell of a step away from CEO of Manchester United. If you're wondering about why United were so off course, maybe something about Richard Arnold's job and his new job reflects why things have been going so wrong. I don't know. Did you expect him to bounce into a different job in football? I don't know, but it's definitely not football. This is motorcycles that he's moved into. But United now have more football people within the club. They should be soon joined by more when Dan Ashworth and that situation is sorted out. No signs of a resolution just yet. But at least United have some people like Jason Wilcox in there. Erik ten Hag is still there. Negotiations over a new contract ongoing for him. And obviously, Omar Berada starts on, I believe it's the 13th of July as the new CEO as well, after his gardening leave ends. But, right, let's talk about Jarrod Branthwaite. Because I think people really rate him highly. He's obviously he joined Everton a couple of years ago. He's had loans at PSV. And he's been highly rated for a few years. Narrowly missed out on England's squad for the Euros, which I think will benefit United if they're to pursue him. Because the last thing you want really is Branthwaite going to England duty, playing against Serbia on Sunday, scoring a goal and having a colossal performance, and his value goes up by 20 million quid or something like that. But it was a bit of a surprise that Gareth Southgate left him out of that squad. But maybe it's to United's benefit. It looks to me like he's the one that they want. It looks to me like he's the primary target. But I don't think it's a be-all and end-all signing, if I could say it that way. Because I like United's behaviour. Yeah, because obviously the Ten Hag news has happened this week, and then 2 days later we get an agreement of personal terms around 150,000-160,000 pounds a week. Branthwaite is happy to join United, even though there's no Champions League football. It's the right step up. I think there's a lot of quality in the kid. Very two-footed. Obviously, I think I even read an interview with one of his coaches from the past few years in the last couple of days. And he insisted, actually, that Branthwaite's so two-footed that everyone thinks he's left-footed, but he's actually right-footed. I don't know how this is going to work. I do think of him as a left centre-back as well, because that seems to be where he spends most of his time. But if he can use that right foot, we know what Ten Hag has said about, you know, his centre-back pairings in the past and how he wants a left-footer on the left and a right-footer on the right in order to help the passing angles and to get the full-backs down the pitch. It seems to me like United are targeting Branthwaite for that right centre-back role, and it might not seem like a natural fit, but I think, you know, given those comments, and I think Branthwaite has even joked in the past about having a 5-star weak foot on FIFA, which you know, suggest to you that you can probably do the right-sided centre-back option as well. And I think he seems to be, to me, the top priority for United, but that doesn't mean that they aren't ready to walk away from a deal if they don't get the right value in it. And we'll talk about Everton in a second. But let me know what you think about the wages. Obviously, the Times broke it last night. Martin Ziegler broke the story about personal terms being agreed, and it was in the ballpark of £150,000-£160,000 a week. I feel like that has gone down with a little bit mixed, because we all know that United's wage bill has been a problem over the last few years. United have taken Harry Maguire and essentially quadrupled or five times his wages. Marcus Rashford's on about £300,000 a week. Casemiro, we know the wages that he's been on as well. But I think if you think of it this way, like I'm okay with this, because I think £150,000-£160,000 a week for, yes, a 21, 22-year-old player, but a player that is going to come in and be a first-team regular. I think you can probably say that if United are going and trying to agree terms with Branthwaite and then talking to Everton about getting the right price this early in the window, it looks like you can probably portray that this is United's top defensive target. Now, for me, £150,000-£160,000 a week is not too bad for a player that's going to play the majority of first-team games and be a regular first choice. I think it's the right step up for Branthwaite. I think he's proven with Everton that he's a really solid defender. Obviously, Everton have played under Sean Dyche a lot more on the back foot and have had to really defend deeper. And there may be some concerns about his distribution and playing on the front foot and playing a high line. But I think Branthwaite's proven in certain situations that he can deal with, you know, 1v1 defending. And I think this is the right profile of player for United to go for. And I've not got an issue really with £150,000-£160,000 a week, because I think that's in line really with what you should really expect of a United first team player moving forward. I think some of the signings over the past year or so have been around that ballpark. And yeah, you could argue that it should be lower, and he doesn't really warrant what I think would be also a quadruple in the wages. But, you know, the fact of the matter is, like, United are one of the best revenue generating clubs in the world. They're going to have a wage bill which is among the top. But, you know, moving forward, like, they have so many issues to correct with the wage bill. I'd be more concerned about the players that are earning like top level money, the 350, 300K a week, you know, sums that some players are getting. This would put Branthwaite in the middle of the pack. And I think if the more players you can get in the middle of that wage pack, the better. I don't think... you never know, do you? United's transfer record in the past has been patchy, to say the least. But you'd hope that with the profiling Ineos have done on this kid, if they feel like he's the right one for them, he seems to have a lot of the tools to be able to succeed, as long as the transfer fee is in the right ballpark as well, and you don't put too much pressure on him by paying that 80 million quid as like what Everton have wanted. I think he should be fine. He should be a long-term servant for United. He's only 21, 22. So this is fine for me, but I think the real contentious issue is the transfer fee. Now, the Times quoted Everton at wanting 70 million. Other reports, Simon Stone from the BBC I've seen, has quoted Everton as wanting 80 million quid. And simply put, and I pretty much agree with most people on this, that he's not worth that. And the real test of the metal on whether this is a new era or not in terms of how United behave in the transfer market is how United behave around this transfer fee. Now, probably the best comparison here is how United pursued Harry Maguire in, I think, 2019 or 2018, 2019, I can't remember which year it was, and tried to get him for substantially less than the 80 million quid Leicester wanted. They spent weeks and weeks and weeks negotiating and ended up paying 80 million quid as Leicester wanted. And you all know, we've all seen it. Credit to Harry Maguire for how he's recovered from this. and how he has battled back from all the criticism that he's had, and the look, frankly, people have taken the mick out of him way too much. I think it's really difficult for a senior pro to be able to deal with all of that abuse and all of that being made fun of to the levels that it went to. But I honestly think that United paying a transfer fee way beyond what he was worth has made people judge him as an £80 million player when we all knew he wasn't. And if United are to truly move forward, they need to pay a fair price for Branthwaite. And I don't think Everton are well within their rights to ask for 70 or 80 million quid, because they've seen other defenders go for, like, I think Gvardiol has gone for a similar number, and we've seen Maguire go for a similar number. And there's been other players, other central defenders over the past couple of years that have gone for similar fees. But, you know,
driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
We all know that Everton have been in a bit of a difficult financial situation. But what I'm happy with around this deal is that United have got these personal terms out of the way and agreed early. And now we have, 2 weeks plus until the end of the football financial year on the 30th of June for negotiation to happen with Everton. Now, nobody really knows just how bad it is for Everton, but Everton are obviously holding out for the numbers 70, 80 million, as we've quoted already. The true test will be how much do Everton stick to their word and how good are United at negotiating that price down? Because I think I've seen people quoted as saying that 50 million quid is around a fair price, and I would agree with that. I think given what he's proven so far, there's good potential there, but given what he's proven so far, I think that's a much fairer price for a player like Jarrod Branthwaite. But, you know, if you can maybe strike a deal as a base case around 50 million quid and have 5-10 million in add-ons, which are achievable, but, you know, could be paid over the next few years, depending on United's success or how successful he is at Man United, that would be more fair and more worthy. Now, what United have done here is struck the deal with two and a half weeks left of this financial year. And if it should give them some leverage, at least, because they've got that part with the player out of the way. And now it's time to see if Everton are really going to stick to their guns and stick to their word, and if their financial situation is going to dictate whether they come down. Obviously, we've got a new team in place, or we will have a new team in place for negotiations. I believe Jason Wilcox is leading them, and Matt Hargreaves is in the mix as well. But look, United have positioned themselves really well here. I think Branthwaite, the fact that they've agreed personal terms is a really good start. But United should really use their behaviour and what we know of their behaviour to their advantage in these negotiations as well. Now, I know Everton would like to keep him, but the fact of the matter is, Branthwaite is probably one of the most sellable assets that they have, if not the most sellable asset that they have, who can fetch the most money. And it's up to them, really, to decide whether they feel like they can get by without selling him. But what United do have in their favour is that they have behaved and they've got to a point where we know that two or three other central defenders are very much clear options to them. Now, we've talked about Todibo a lot on the podcast. Myself and Rob have talked about him a lot. I think we maybe expected that he'd join last summer, but it was contingent on Harry Maguire leaving. And obviously, he rejected the move to West Ham and ended up staying. So United would have, you say, too many central defenders the way that it worked last season. They probably could have done with him given all the injuries that United did have. But, you know, I think the United had like 5-6 centre backs on the books. Just all of them seemed to get injured at the same time. And then it proved that, you know, this other issues outside of having that amount of players that you need to fix in terms of the injuries. But they couldn't really, without selling Maguire or without getting a central defender off their books, they could not willingly bring in Todibo because they would have had too much stock at centre-back. But with Nice owned by Ineos, I've even seen quotes of Todibo being valued at around 25, 30, 35 million. And that's a hell of a deal to trigger. I think the way that it's looking at the moment, that option strikes me as an option they can just trigger at any time. And they could probably use it as a deal conditional on whether they trigger it based on other negotiations of other players. So if you know you're in a position with Todibo where you can just move on it at any time and try and progress on other targets to see if they are the right options and you can get fair deals on them, then maybe that's the right way to go. So I think that option is going to be there on Todibo for a good few weeks yet. Whether they end up signing him in at all remains to be seen. But I think personally that United need two centre halves in the summer. Whether they go and sign two, given all the other positions that they have to cover, I think left back is a real sore issue with Luke Shaw's injury issues. I think you need one DM at least. Obviously, there's uncertainty on Amrabat. Casemiro is pretty much up for sale as well. So depending on how many of those go, even McTominay is an option to be sold as well for the right price. You may need two in there. And I know that centre forward is going to be a backup or a rotational option with Rasmus Højlund is something that United need to bring in as well. And then there's the Michael Olise speculation on the right wing, but I'll talk about him a little bit later in the show. Look, United need two centre backs. I think Johnny Evans, it looks like he's going to stick around. United have offered him a new deal, but he really, really, really absolutely should be fifth choice. He should be there for the vibes. He should be there for the experience. He should be there to come in as a rotation option when necessary and when needed. But that was what he was meant to be last summer until all the injuries took over. And I think United have been, as part of their season review, investigating why they've had so many injuries over the past year or so. I know Luke Shaw has pointed at United and himself as being culpable in the fact that he has played so few matches in the last year. But that's a separate issue they need to fix. But I do think still that when you think of all the defenders that United have or have got, Bleacher Martinez is now unquestionably United's best centre-back. That's because Rafa Varane has left on a free transfer, so you do need to replace him. You need a first-choice right centre-back partner for Rafa, for Lisandro Martinez. But then you need backup options as well, because we saw that Martinez himself had injuries, which United mismanaged last season. And when United didn't have him there, I thought he was probably the biggest miss of all because of the tenacity he has on the ball, the ability to play with the ball, his tenacity out of possession, his aggression, all of this. I think he symbolizes what a United player under Erik ten Hag needs to be and what a United player needs to be in general. But once he's not there, you are so exposed and you have this such a drop-off in terms of what you can do in possession that you probably do need a player like Branthwaite who can play both sides. Maybe they'll end up being the first choice pairing. And if Martinez isn't there, for example, maybe Branthwaite can switch to the left side. But then what happens to the right centre-back? I think you do still need another centre-back option there. Maybe it will be Todibo, especially if Maguire or Lindelof leave. But Another player in the mix is Lenny Yoro. He's 18 years old, plays in France at the moment. Lille is, as per the excellent David Ornstein, available for around £42 million this summer. But there's a big condition on this that I think Liverpool are interested, but the kid wants Real Madrid. And I think Real Madrid want him. It's just a case of whether they can make the deal happen. But that's the priority. And I think if you're in competition with European champions, Real Madrid, who've proven that they have absolutely nailed their transfer strategy over the last few years, they go for some of the best young players in the world and develop them right to the point where they do become the best players in the world, as you can evidence with Vinicius and Bellingham and, you know, Rodrigo, maybe not to such an extent, but Endrick's coming in as well. You'd think that they'll end up doing that with him. And Yoro is probably the next one at centre-back. So with Nacho leaving for, I believe he's going to Saudi Arabia as well, it looks like Real Madrid are clearing the decks in order to bring him in. They have other positions that they'd like to fill. Mbappe's already joining, but Alphonso Davies, I believe they are waiting on him to see whether they will do a deal with Bayern, which will cost them some money. And maybe it's a case of Yoro waiting for them to be able to put up the money. But I think, look, United aren't in a position here where they're the front runners by any means, but at least they're in the mix. And I think that's quite encouraging. I think the big thing for me with all this and all the players that I've listed and talked about so far is that they're all the right age profile. They're all of the right levels of talent for me. And they're all technically good players who can probably come in and grow with Manchester United as they grow. And that is not something we've been able to say has been a regular thing for United over the last few years. We've seen them go for countless 30-plus-year-old strikers. Let's hope that doesn't happen again this year, unless we feel it's the necessary move. And he's an understudy to Rasmus Højlund. But all of the players that are on the list, you think of Milos Kerkez, you think of João Neves, Michael Olise, Joshua Zirkzee, Todibo, Branthwaite. All of these players are missing a ton out as well of players that United are interested in. They're all of the age, 20-ish, 21, 22, 23, 24. And that profile is spot on. I think that's the area they should be working in. It's very, very similar, actually, to, I hate bringing the comparisons to Arsenal, but now Arsenal have built a team of players like, you know, they signed Ben White when he was in his early 20s, Saliba when he was in his early 20s or when he was a teenager. Martin Odegaard, the example from Real Madrid, they picked him up for 35 million-ish quid and now he's their captain and one of the best midfielders in the Premier League. And they've developed players through their academy as well. But now that Arsenal have a first team of players who are in their mid-20s and able to play at the right intensity and deal with the demands of Premier League football and Champions League football appropriately. Another issue is their depth. I think that maybe that holds them back. Maybe they need more players to be able to rotate into that. But in terms of their first team, I think the progression that they've made is an example of how to do it in the modern day. Although, obviously, I'm sure people are shouting at me now saying, hey, United are more successful than Arsenal and Erik ten Hag has won more trophies than Arteta, which is actually the case. But in terms of how to build a team to deal with the rigors of modern football, Arsenal are a good example. They just need to make that next step. And I feel like United should be looking themselves to build a strong, deep squad of players around that age profile. So that's what I'm trying to say. Look, I don't think Yoro will happen. I don't think it will. But if United are targeting players like that, then I think it's encouraging. Depending on what happens with Real Madrid, maybe they'll be ready to pounce if it gets to that. But look, they're in that mix. We'll wait and see on that one. I don't think that's going to be one that is going to come to fruition because I think Real Madrid, once they get into that position, invariably do pull it off. But look, if United ended up coming out of the transfer window with Branthwaite at 50, 55 million and Todibo at the price that we've been quoted, two new centre-backs, and they end up selling one of Maguire or Lindelof, I think that's a really strong window and you've got some really good centre-back options there that you can rotate through and then clear up the injuries as well and you get to see the best of them. So that's where I stand on that. Let me know your thoughts on Branthwaite, on Todibo, on Yoro as well. The wages, what do you think is acceptable to pay for Jarrad Branthwaite in terms of wages and the transfer fee? What is too much? Let me know in the comments. Please drop one below. Subscribe to the channel as well and like the video. Hit the notification bell so you never miss a show. And subscribe on audio on Apple and Spotify. And give us a 5-star review as well. Follow on social media at @_ScottSaunders on X, Instagram, and TikTok, and at @TPLMUFC on X. All right. Targets and other positions then. Let's talk about this. I like João Neves. I'm not going to spend too much time on this. Maybe there'll be another day where this comes more into focus. I like João Neves. I think this is another really high quality profile of player. Whether we see him play for Portugal at the Euros and excel remains to be seen. They've got other players in those midfield positions like Bettina and João Palhinha, who are, but in Palhinha's case, more experienced, a really good defensive player, but maybe we'll see a bit of Neves off the bench. The problem with that is I think Benfica are very much being Benfica over the transfer fee, asking for 100 million plus euros. And I think if United can work that one down, then fantastic. But Benfica have held out for great, massive money for clubs that even are like excellent in the transfer market, let alone Man United over the past few years. So they have they're one of the best sellers in world football. So if you can get the deal done for the right price there, then I think that'd be fantastic. But I think at the current case, I don't think that one's a goer. We'll see how that develops. But I wanted to talk about, let's talk Michael Olise briefly, because I think, look, right, we've had news this week on, we've also always known of United's interest. And I think people have been looking at the manager situation and thinking, United are sleeping on this. Chelsea are moving. Newcastle are moving. Bayern are moving. And obviously they've been the developments over the last few days. But look, Olise is really talented. I do have some concerns about his injury record, especially at the price of 60 odd million, as has been quoted. I do have concerns about that. But I think he's a really quality player. I think he's a good player and could add something extra to the United front line. But there's a couple of things here. He may well play in the Olympics. And just putting that out there, he may well play in the Olympics. I believe he's in the preliminary squad for France. So that would mean ultimately that he does join United late. And please don't come. If United do end up signing him, please don't come back and say, oh, what are United doing? They've signed this player, but he's playing in the Olympics. He can't join until September, mid-September. Like, look, that's just the way of the calendar nowadays. But, you know, I think he's a really strong option on that right side. Injury record would need to be managed and we'd need to see him much more prevalent and much more present to be convinced that this is the right move. It's a big risk, that one. But look, I think for me, the big thing on Olise is, and I put this out on X in the past few days, I think the response was in agreement, but some differing opinions on this. Right wing does not sit towards the top of my rankings list in terms of priority positions for the summer. I would put two centre-backs ahead of right wing. I put central midfield, at least one, ahead of right wing. And I put the second choice striker ahead of priority of right wing. Like people looked at the deal for Mason Mount last summer, the fact that it was triggered first and perhaps left United short in other areas. Obviously, we know the fact that they couldn't sign Amrabat on a permanent deal at the end of the last transfer window because they'd spent all their money already. Like that was criticized and probably rightly so. It was Mason Mount was not the top priority in terms of the position. I think there were other areas of the pitch which needed attention earlier. And obviously if you're committing that amount of money to that position and you can't sell back in order to regenerate your cash, then it's going to be difficult for you. But I think the reasons why Olise and that position is not a priority for me, and please let me know in the comments if you disagree with this or agree with this. there's too much depth there at the moment. Like I say depth in the loosest sense, obviously, because I know people are, your mind's made up on Antony. I think most United fans would like to see him leave in the summer. I think he'll stay personally because A, who's going to be paying 30, 40 million for him? That's still a massive loss to be taking on him, by the way. He's Erik ten Hag's guy, even though I've seen reports that Erik ten Hag gave him a dressing down after complaining that he was being played at left back, which is interesting because we've seen him have a temper tantrum once or twice when that move's been made in matches. But you've got all these players in the right who can play right wing at the moment. Look, I'll throw Rashford in there, but it's like he can play out there. He doesn't like playing out there, but it is an option that you can use if everything else is goes to pot. Like I probably put him as like sixth rank. But you also have Antony, who I've just talked about. You have Alejandro Garnacho, who, yes, left winger, obviously, and I think that would probably be his best position, but he can do it on the right side. He can, he scored in the FA Cup final from that position. He gives you an option to get down the byline. He gives you an option to drive at defenders from that position. I think he's more adept at playing on the right, whereas Rashford isn't. And I think people will look at Garnacho and Rashford being the two options to rotate on the left side. But think of going into next season and how well Garnacho has been developing. But then think, what if Garnacho is made as like instant first choice and then you've got Marcus Rashford on the bench, can't really get a look in, or he's coming off the bench and he's being brought up as, you know, essentially the second choice in that position. How does that dynamic work? How does that reporting come about? What we've already seen reporting on Rashford over the season so far that he's unhappy. And is that a situation that we really want? Because we really want festering anymore? Because I think if Rashford is, look, second priority in that position on the left side, it could cause problems. It really could, in the sense of there might be nothing like within the camp itself. Maybe Rashford has to realize that he needs to work harder and he needs to perform better in order to win his position back. But it is a concern because you know that which way the press will go. You absolutely know. Even if the reports are unfounded, it'll be Rashford is unhappy at being second choice. He feels like he should be first choice. He's the club's highest earner. And look, I could see that coming about. So it'd be good to have those two as options in that position. But if you go and sign a first choice right winger on the other side and you make them all fight it out, then maybe it causes a bit of an issue with the dynamic. I don't know. I'm not saying don't sign Michael Olise, by the way. I'm just saying in terms of the list of priorities, I think it should be relatively lower down. And if you're committing a lot of money to it, I'm worried that other positions might not get the attention they need. But Ahmad is there. Everybody's screaming out to give Ahmad a chance. We saw him score the winner against Liverpool in the FA Cup. We saw some really decent performances, some good touches, some good dribbles in the games against Arsenal and this kind of thing. Newcastle, he scored against as well. I think most people would like to see him get another chance. So then you think, Antony's not going anywhere. Garnacho can play there. Ahmad, you hope, doesn't go anywhere. So that's three realistic options from the right side you can think of. Then you've got Pulisic, who's out on loan. Maybe he goes out on loan and gets sold. But that's another option that is playing there. And then you've got Mason Greenwood and Jadon Sancho. Jadon Sancho started the Champions League final on the right-hand side for Borussia Dortmund. I know those two players United are looking to sell. But you've got to think about United's negotiating position on those players, right? If there's plenty of interest in Greenwood, it's the right decision for me to sell him. If you can get 40 million for him, then fantastic. I think that's, you know, money you can reinvest on a youth product. And I think that will really help United's PSR position. We'll wait and see what happens there, whether he goes out on loan with obligation or whether he's sold for a certain amount. But the fact of the matter is they've got to get him out first for me. I think if you add Olise as a sixth or seventh option on the right side before you do anything else or before you get your other priority positions in order, that might not help. You know, you just created more of a problem for yourself in the sense of like other clubs will know that, hey, you already want to sell Greenwood and Sancho, but you've just added to this position. So you've just made your need to sell them more prevalent and more obvious. And look, I hope that, you know, I can get this Greenwood deal done in the next few weeks. I think Juventus are in the box seat at the moment. And it's even with Juventus, it's a case for them. They need to sell one of Federico Chiesa or Sule. One of them needs to go in order for them to raise the money in order to sign Mason Greenwood. So look, that, I think that one will be maybe a couple of weeks down the line. But they have to get that deal done. And then you've got Jadon Sancho there as well. And we don't know what's going to happen to him, like in terms of where he's going to go, what the negotiation and the terms of the deal is going to be like. But we do know that United want to sell him. But the fact of the matter is, when I talk about Elise, I would like to see him come in. I think he's a talented player, but he's not going to be there and most likely for the start of the season. Or he'd be coming back late anyway, given the Olympics. And then you have all those other options which you have to contend with first. So you bring in a new first choice, and then that automatically kind of means that you've got so many options in that position that you have to work through. And it's just a bit of a concern, because essentially what I'm trying to say is I think two centre halves, a defensive midfielder, I forgot left back, a left back and a new striker, I think are all, for me, above that priority. Let me know in the comments how you would rank all those positions. But talking of second choice strikers or rotation strikers, Joshua Zirkzee, who plays for Bologna, Champions League football, he will be getting next season if he stays, but it's looking like he might end up leaving. For me, I think this is an incredible bargain. £34 million release clause is not a pittance nowadays, but it's a very, very good value. When you think Rasmus Højlund was essentially double that price, you know, he would be a player and a really strong option with the type of player he is as well, who can maybe knit things together really well. Different profile of player from Højlund. I think that would be an excellent deal to trigger. But obviously, I think if you've read the news around him recently, Milan look like they're in the box seat here. They've agreed personal terms with the player. But I think there's an issue with commissions of his agents and this kind of thing, which are holding things up. But I think he would be ready to join Milan. And as it stands, Milan will probably be able to offer him like first choice in that position into next season with Olivier Giroud going to MLS. And, you know, I think there's a big position for them to fill there, and they can essentially guarantee him first team football at a good level. And I could see that one happening. But look, if United are in that mix as well and showing interest, if they can somehow switch themselves to second or first in that pecking order with their behavior over the next couple of weeks, then that would be fantastic. But even when you consider Højlund still at the club, we'd like to see his minutes maybe lessened, I guess, because, you know, there was way too much demand on a player like 20 or 21 in his first season. He needed another option to rotate with. It was only towards the end of the season that we saw Bruno Fernandes playing in the false nine. And I think that worked and is an option, but United still do need a second choice striker or a rotation striker to give them something different. I've seen Mateus Cunha from Wolves has been linked as well with a move to United, but I think it'd be a lot more substantially. He'll cost substantially more than Xerxes would. So I think that's my thoughts on him and my thoughts on all of the players that United have been targeting. But just generally, I think my point with all of this is I've run through all of the names. I will definitely talk about some more players in depth over the next few weeks. Be back Tuesdays and Fridays when I can. And if anything changes, I'll post on Twitter about it. But that's the priority at the moment. I think United are, what they're doing, and this is why it's encouraging for me, is that they're targeting the right age profile of players. They're targeting really talented young lads who can come in and probably step into the first team or first team pitcher straight away. And it looks like they're going, or they're looking at deals which are in good value ranges. João Neves aside, if they can get that down, then it remains to be seen. But even him, like if United were to pick one player this summer to go big on, I would say he'd be worth it. But look, let me know, guys, what you think. I've just talked for 42 and a half minutes about United's transfer target. Seems like the time's absolutely flown by. But obviously, Jared Branthwaite, I've touched on. Tadebo, I've touched on. Lenny Yoro, I've touched on. João Neves, Michael Olise, Joshua Zirkzee, and all the players that United have to sell off, and all the positions, all the players on the right wing that United need to clear the decks for, in my opinion, before going for Olise. But look, get in the comments. Let me know if you're happy with the terms on Branthwaite, what you think is an acceptable transfer fee to pay for him, and what you think the ranking of priority positions are in the comments. That would be really helpful. And I really appreciate the comments that you've put on the last video as well, and everybody who's contacted me on X and on Twitter. It's good for me. Let's just say confidence boosting. I'm glad that a number of you stuck with me and sent me some nice comments, because obviously it's a little bit different for me doing one person straight down the lens and rambling on about football stuff for however long it's been, 43 minutes now. But look, I'll be back next week with some of the latest on. I'm sure there'll be some developments around United's transfer targets, because it seems like they are getting moving. And I think for me, the last thing I'll say here is United have new owners. United, well, part owners. United have new people coming into these positions. I understand the resistance, and look, prove to me something's different, because I've seen the Glazers come in and absolutely ruin this place for the last 10, 11 years. But a lot of what Ineos have done so far, I'm happy with. And I think the way that they're going after players, I think reflects what they've done with the manager situation as well. They're looking at a bunch of options. They're getting to certain points in negotiations with each of these people, and then they're making a decision based on what the information that they have. And I think that's the right way to go. That's how a professional football club should act. Maybe a bit more in the public eye than the likes of Liverpool and Arsenal. But, you know, it's a start, right? And I'm very much ready to give Ineos a chance to turn things around. And I think the signs are encouraging so far. But let me know. Subscribe to the audio show on Apple and Spotify and give us a 5-star review as well. Watch us on YouTube. We can like the stream, subscribe, leave a comment, and hit the notification bell so you never miss a show. And follow us on social media as well, at @_ScottSaunders on X, Instagram, and TikTok, and at @TPLMUFC on X as well. Until next time, this has been The Promised Land from me, Scott Saunders. Thanks very much for watching and listening.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.